my apologies. Sorry about that. Let's see if this is going to work right. Robin, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, Ruben. How are you?
I am good. Welcome back to the program. Are you sitting at 70? Sorry, I'm running all around the studio doing different things, checking email and missing commercial. No, not missing commercial breaks, but missing my cue. We are back, and welcome to the Ozarks today. Joining us now is Robin Vanderwall from NARSOL, which is the National Association for Rational Sexual Offense Laws. Robin, thank you so much for joining me. I've been kind of running around like a chicken with my head cut off, and I greatly appreciate you guys accommodating me on such short notice. I really do appreciate that.
It is my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
We are obviously coming up on trick-or-treat, Halloween, and one of the things NARSOL likes to focus on, and I think it's a very valid focus, is an unfair treatment of sex offender registrants, and that's what NARSOL is all about, is making sure that laws are applied fairly and that people are given the opportunity that everybody else is given and are not targeted unequally. And on Halloween, that seems to be something that, at least from your guys' perspective, you feel does happen, an unjustified targeting of sex offenders. Tell us about the message you guys put out every Halloween.
Well, our concern, of course, is for the safety of everybody, and that includes the children who are participating in Halloween festivities, but also, the sex offender population, which is, in many cases, can be an easy target for people who would want to do them harm. But with regard to the various policies that some states enact, or some states or some cities and localities enact, that require offenders, for instance, not to have their lights on or make great effort to publicize their location and their whereabouts. We just don't feel like that's either necessary or fair, in particular given the fact that the majority of the sex offender population in the United States are people who are no longer under any form of supervision or any court-ordered sentence. They're just they're citizens like everybody else, who should have the same options and same freedoms as everybody else, to include participating in the festivities of Halloween. And Halloween is an interesting holiday or interesting festivity in its own right. And there's a certain part of it, I think, that this whole annual fear mongering that takes place with regard to sex offenders, I think a part of that is just simply, it just feeds the fiction of the season.
And Robin, when you look at some of those policies you talked about, and it's one of those things where on the surface it sounds great. Everybody just they see the policies and they, oh, that's great, they're trying to protect our kids. Well, what about sex offenders whose crimes had nothing to do with children? Not to mention the fact that sex offenders have one of the lowest recidivism rates of any felony crimes committed across the country. And you don't see every year putting out warnings at Christmas time, hey, you've got somebody who stole a TV who lives a block from you. Don't buy a big screen TV for Christmas because they're going to come and rob your house and steal your TV. It is an unfair targeting, and I don't think that any area can specifically point to a large number, if any, instances of sex offenders reoffending on Halloween. So it is something that sounds great in theory until you look at the numbers and the statistics and realize that it is kind of fear-mongering. There's nothing really to justify it.
Yeah, there's really nothing at all. And as a matter of fact, as far as we are aware, there's never been a single instance at Halloween of a sex offender, a person already registered, doing anything sexually untoward towards a child or anybody else for that matter. That's not to say it won't happen, but statistically speaking, people are in much greater danger on Halloween for being hit by a car or being targeted for harassment or targeted for a prank or targeted because people just want to scare you, that sort of thing. But it's really, if you look at the statistical data, and this stuff is pretty solid at this point, better than 90% of people who are victimized in some way, and that includes children and adults, are typically victimized by somebody they know, somebody they've already built some level of trust with. And that's unfortunate, but it explains why Halloween is much less likely to be a problem than, say, for instance, Thanksgiving or Christmas or any other holiday where you have a gathering of close friends and close family, because that's when these kinds of incidences do tend to spike. And I don't believe there's anybody who's going to rationally put forward a proposal that would restrict sex offenders' Christmas activities. At least so far, nobody's been that bold.
Yeah, well, I mean, what if you're someone who you know committed what is considered to be a sex offense, you know, 15 years ago, and now you're restricted in some areas from taking your own kids out trick or treating? It is part of a stigma that exists, and I can tell you now, there will be people listening to this program who will be up in the air and complain that I'm on the air defending sex offenders. No one defends the acts that have been committed. You know, no one is trying to justify any of that. We understand someone has a record for a reason. But at the same time, we live in a country and a society where our justice system is supposed to be predicated upon rehabilitation and a second chance. If someone's done their time and they've done the crime, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, relieved of that burden and given the opportunity to carry on. And yet, you know, when you look at sex offender restrictions, whether it be Halloween or just year-round, these are not only things that continue to stigmatize people because of often the unwanted or unwarranted fear, but these are limitations placed on people's lives, you know, where you can live, where you can go. I had an interview on this program with the county sheriff where a gentleman was arrested for being a sex offender in a park, and I asked in theory, okay, there's a park with a pool in it. What if he's just taking a walk at 6 o'clock in the morning and there's nobody else in the park and the pool's not even open, there are no children anywhere present? Nope, still against the law. He cannot be within that park. Things like that, in my opinion, are unwarranted and unfair.
Absolutely. And what you're describing there are what we call second-generation sex offender laws. What do I mean by second generation? I mean laws that restrict access to public areas, laws that restrict access to parks, access to places where other people might congregate. These are second generation sex offender laws. And they actually serve a fairly interesting purpose, because law enforcement now, by and large, unless they're still sticking their heads under a rock someplace, are fully aware of the fact that this population of people have a very low rate of recidivism. As a matter of fact, in most studies, it comes back as the lowest in most states where they've done a study. So these new laws, these second-generation laws, the effect that they're having is they're actually making it possible for law enforcement to perpetuate and, in some sense, enhance recidivism. Because these things that people get caught up in, you know, violating, being someplace you shouldn't be, you get penalized for that, you get cited for that, it becomes a criminal process for you. And that makes it look as if, yes, we do have a problem with these people. See what they're doing. They can't do what they're supposed to do. Well, that's the equivalent of what we call technical violations, you know, in a probation setting. So you end up enhancing the overall rate of recidivism for a body politic, or body, in this case, a body of people who've been criminally convicted. You're able to make the argument that we have to have more aggressive policies because these people just can't stop committing these crimes, when in fact they're not really committing new crimes. They're just violating all these ridiculous conditions consequent to a conviction that are just impossible in many cases to adhere to.
And it also, you know, as we said, it goes back to that stigma. When someone hears that, the first thought is, oh, he's in the park preying on kids. He's looking for another victim. And you know, he just wanted to take a walk. That's not at all the case. And the other thing that communities are doing is, you know, in terms of placing limits on, you can't live within 2,000 feet of this, or you can't live within 1,000 feet of that. It is, for someone who is supposed to have done their time and been free, it's creating a virtual cell, locking them into certain places, which allows law enforcement to, you know, maybe better track their movements and watch for additional offenses or something that they might be able to find an offense for. And another thing that it brings up, and this is, you know, a little bit off topic, but you guys have put out advisories about this as well that we talked about, in areas struck by disasters or hurricanes, it actually put someone's life at danger. I remember there was a story in, I believe, North Carolina, where someone who had been a convicted sex offender was told, you can bring your mother or your grandmother to the shelter. If you want to ride it out, you have to go wait it out in the jail lobby. You can't come into a shelter. Your life is on the line.
Yeah, and that's just ridiculous. So, and everybody's already dealing with a terrible threat, terribly traumatic situation. When they're trying to, you know, find safe shelter in the midst of a horrific storm. It's just absurd, and it angers you, actually, if you listen to the, most of the time your governors and other various people in positions of authority with public safety will come on the television and talk about how we want to make sure all our citizens are taken care of. Well, you don't. You really don't. You're lying. You're saying we know of at least one population of citizens that you could care less about. And I think that's really the point. You know, we have been maligned. We as sex offenders have been maligned for so long. People do not even get the fact that we are citizens. We still pay taxes. We still, many of us have jobs, even though we don't, oftentimes we can't find the better jobs. We are at least people who are doing what we can to contribute and be law-abiding citizens. And all we're asking for, we're not asking for special treatment. We're just asking to be treated like everybody else. And that, to me, is American. Simple as that.
There have been a number of laws, and I can give you an example right now in my home state of Ohio, and I've talked about this on the air before as well. For a long period of time, if you were someone who had a couple of DWI convictions, you were saddled with having to put these nice pink license plates or bright yellow license plates on your vehicle, which is a red flag for law enforcement to target you and pull you over and watch if you're leaving a gas station and see if someone's buying a six-pack, and whether it's someone who is just driving the vehicle, whether they're the actual DUI committer or not. It allows law enforcement to target you. Those have been stricken down as unconstitutional, and those have been removed from the books. So those have gone by the wayside. Now, I know you guys are constantly looking to reform laws to make them more common sense. Do you think there will ever become a time where the entire registry will eventually be stricken down, the registry process?
Frankly, I do. Now, this is not something that even people within my advocacy community would necessarily agree with, but I believe it's possible that we're looking at a future without a public registry. And the reason why is because when registries were first proposed as reasonable tools for public safety, there was no internet. There was no global connectivity. There were no apps. You know, you can just pull your phone out and find it, basically find out anything you want about most anybody around you if you look hard enough. So the impact of that accessibility to data and accessibility to people's records, that makes things much, much different than they were 10 or 15 years ago. Now, here's another real problem, and this is why we fight this so hard legally. And this is the message that I send into the reentry community that I work very closely with. I tell them all the time, I say, look, if we can't stop this, if we can't put this public policy tool to bed, ultimately, and then what I'm talking about there is a public registry, then it will simply morph into this massive system of post-judicial registration and post-judicial law enforcement surveillance. And more and more people convicted of crimes that have nothing at all to do with sex will end up finding themselves on these types of registries. And the impact of them is severe, much more severe than criminal punishment in a lot of ways, because of the impact it has on your social life, your economic life, your academic life, your professional life. I mean, when you're in prison, you're in prison. But and hopefully you didn't have to go to prison. But even if you did and you get out, you're looking for the opportunity to get your life back together. And for the sex offender and for potentially a great many more people, that opportunity will simply cease to exist with this tool in place.
And imagine being someone who is within a few years old of your girlfriend, maybe your early teens or something like that. You've been having an ongoing relationship that everybody's parents are aware of, and in fact, we have a case pending in our area like this right now. Suddenly, the girlfriend or the boyfriend or one of the parents, for whatever reason, gets upset and decides now is the time to report it, and suddenly you're a sex offender for the rest of your life. Fast forward 10, 15, 20 years, you're someone who did nothing that most normal people don't engage in on a regular basis, other than doing the math on someone's birthday. You're trying to live a normal life. Good luck applying for a job with that on your record and trying to be a positive contributing member of society.
Yeah, and we see more of that too. We see a great deal more of that than we did just 10 years ago. The Romeo and Juliet types of cases, and this is interesting that you bring this up, because it's another another phenomena culturally that's occurring in front of us is the rollback, you know, of statute of limitations and bars against bringing prosecutions many, many years after they occur. And you touched on the head of something that's very important in this, and we never hear anybody talking about, and that's what do you do with the sort of cultural slippage? You know, what was okay in 1968, or what was okay in 1978, becomes un-okay in 1998 or 2008. And so you've got scenarios where people now are confronting what was not criminal acts then and have, in a sense, culturally become criminal acts, or at least have become acts that we collectively frown upon, although at that time we didn't. So it's a serious issue. NARSOL has taken a position against the eradication of statute of limitations because we feel like those are important features of our criminal justice system, and they are features that evolved over the course of hundreds of years for the very purpose that they exist, and that's to prevent anybody from being convicted of something many, many years later that probably was not a crime when it was ostensibly committed.
And Robin, another part of the discussion, and unfortunately it is so in-depth, it involves psychology and really requires analysis of every human being included in the conversation, that I don't think we'll ever get to a full solution. And some of our callers have pointed it out. You know, we all know that our country went through the sexual revolution and changed the way our perceptions are about sex. In the technological world now, where there is so much more access immediately to that type of information, some could make the argument that maybe or perhaps people mature in an earlier age or begin making decisions to engage in activities at earlier age. And that is part of a cultural phenomenon as well that has to be evaluated when you determine, you know, you talk about laws that are illegal now that weren't then. You know, what about the possibility of something that has been illegal for generations maybe being redefined because of the access to information and the continued evolution of our human sexuality?
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily deep topic, one worthy of a lot of discussion. I'm certainly not prepared to engage in that discussion. And NARSOL sort of stays away from that discussion for obvious reasons. But I think where we can all agree is that when you're dealing with youth, when you're dealing with people who are still in the development age of their life when it comes to their sexuality, at the very least, we ought to put in place public policies that don't seek to use, you know, a big stick. And that's what we have. We have laws in place that when people run afoul of sexual-based offense, rather than trying to deal with the matter in a more delicate way, in a way that seeks to preserve rather than destroy, our system simply goes and grabs a big stick and beats the hell out of somebody and ruins their life forever. And that's just not the right approach. It's a disproportionate reaction, and it's not the sort of reaction that a modern, developed, and otherwise urbane culture should take.
Robin, I appreciate your time. Always great information. I love having these conversations. I'm going to let you go. I'm almost out of time, and it's probably time now for the people to start calling the main office and demanding my job and my head on a platter.
Well, let's hope it doesn't go there. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you, Ruben.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Robin Vanderwall from NARSOL, the National Association for Rational Sexual Offense Laws. Look them up online if you're interested in more of the information and the stuff that they're looking at.